Can we start, Marcy?
Bonne déjà présent.
Morning, morning, morning. Marcy, flight the agenda.
Is it visible on your side?
Yes, it is. Thank you very much. Honorable members, we've got an agenda that has been flighted. And once more, good morning to all of you, honorable members. And also good morning to our support staff. This meeting of today will be the short one because at 11:45, we must adjourn because I've just seen in our groups of parliament that the bus today will leave at 12 o'clock. Now that we are attending a physical meeting of the Lantika when the finance minister will be tabling the medium-term budget policy statement. So, honorable members, you are all welcome to this meeting where we're gonna deliberate to the clause by clause of the two of the bill, which is the PSA today, and also our content advisor and the state law advisor, they're here, the legal advisor, to present one, the adoption of the hearings, the public hearings report, which is the two, the reports of the two hearing public hearings we had that other week. And also they will report on the motion of disability of the public. You are all welcome, honorable members, and I will take apologies that I saw in the group, one apology of Honorable Komani. I'm not sure if there's further apologies, Marcy.
And nothing shares yet. Thank you, Chair.
So there's no further apologies, Honorable Members, and of which I will give then to the team to present the public hearings report, Honorable Members.
Must you give me the right to share?
Yes, they can proceed, Marcy.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members and colleagues on the platform.
Honorable Mr. Ngwepe.
Yeah, I'm still trying to, to get the correct report. So many reports here, so I'm trying to get the right one. Okay, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members and colleagues, we have prepared a draft report on the public hearings. I believe the report is the one showing, if I may check with you, because I believe is the one that is a draft report of the Portfolio Committee on the Public Service Administration on the public hearings, written and oral. Is it the one that is showing on the screen? Just to be sure. Hello, Chair. Mazi?
Hi, Mr. Mwepe.
Yeah, I'm just checking if it's the report so that I can be able to talk to the same report. Is it the one that is a written draft report of the Portfolio Committee, not the analysis? It's the one that is showing on your screen. I'm just checking so that I can be able
Yes,
to...
it's the draft report of the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration on the public hearings, written and oral. Amendment bill.
Chairperson, without any waste of time, this report has been circulated to honorable members. I'm not going to read page by page, but the report encompasses what was submitted to the Portfolio Committee through writing and orally. So I'll just go page by page, honorable chairperson, and maybe just to emphasize that this report, we are not going to ATC the report on the public hearings, but it's for the committee to put them for record purposes, in case the president assigned this into law. If he might need this information, then would be able to give the president this information in terms of the process that was undertaken with regard to the public participation. Chair, each one, if members would want to correct something, they will just indicate through you, Chairperson. I'll move with speed in light of time. And on page 2, I'm trying to increase the font so that members can be able to see. Okay, page 3, page 4, and page 5, page 6, and page 7, and page 8. Page 9, page 10, and page 11. And then then we only included the departmental responses with regard to the public participation, because the department was responding to the to the written and oral submission. That's the report, honorable members. If there are no corrections, then Chair, we can move for the adoption of the report on the.
Honorable members, that's the report of the public hearings. And it was sent to all of us so that as we then input or edit, you are able to do it page by page. And I will then take hands, if there are hands, to this report, honorable members. If there's, you think that there's something that has been omitted, because when we had those 2 days public hearings, I know that you, honorable members, you were noting. So I will take hands if there's anything else that you think that it has been omitted, or you want to edit, or you think that there's a sentence that you don't That doesn't make sense, honorable members, to the report. Any hands, honorable members?
Honorable Chair, it's Kivi.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kemi. Maybe you can go ahead.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning to the honorable members and everybody on the platform. Honorable Chair, on my side, I haven't seen anything. I think whatever that has been highlighted on this report is clear on my side. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kibi. So I will
Chair, Manjuli.
Yes, Honorable Manjuli.
Chairperson, I would love to, firstly, we welcome the report from Mr. Ngwepe as tabled to this matter. But also, I would love to echo Kibi's words to say, for now, I haven't reaction to what was presented and discussed. Thank you.
So are you then adopting this report, honorable members?
Chair, I thought you were firstly opening the platform for deliberations. If there are no deliberations, Chairperson, I move for the adoption of the report.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Ntuli, because there's no other hands except you and Honorable Kibi. Thank you very much, Honorable Ntuli. The report is adopted and seconded to this report.
Honorable Chair, it's Kibi here.
Yes, Honorable Kibi.
Thank you, Chair. I second the proposal by Honorable Ntuli on the adoption of the report. I thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. The report is adopted as the true reflection of what happened at the hearings on the 2 days. Thank you very much. The next item is then they will report on the motion of disability of the Public Service Amendment Bill. Mr. Mwep, we can't hear you. Is anyone?
Chair, it has become a standard procedure in Parliament that before a committee can discuss clause by clause of the bill, the committee should conduct this process of motion of desirability to determine whether the bill is desirable or not desirable. So here, Honorable Chairperson, the committee at the end will then indicate whether the bill is desirable or undesirable. Means that we are not going to discuss loss by loss of this bill. But if it's desirable, then the committee will then continue with the loss by loss deliberation on this bill. So on the number one, on page one, I think it's just a background. When the speaker referred to this public service amendment bill to the portfolio committee, it's just to outline that process. and then further indicate that we have undertaken the public participation process through the public hearings, both written and the physical public hearings in Parliament. And also we have just highlighted the objects of the bill. So the question, Honorable Chair, that you should pose to your honorable members is like highlighted in red, which reads as follows: as part of strengthening the existing loopholes in the legislation governing the public administration, the committee is of the opinion that the bill is desirable or undesirable to deliberate on the details of the legislation. So the committee will then have to indicate whether they agree that or they disagree that the bill is desirable. I leave it that to you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ngwepe. Honorable members, this is the motion of desirability, and of which it has been fight by Mr. Ngwepe, and of which, honorable members, we attended the public hearings, and there were presentation firstly written, and also there were oral presentations to this portfolio committee, and to the sense that even the stakeholders and individuals, while they had some other issues in terms of the bills, many of those that presented before this portfolio committee felt that they support the support of these bills, but however, there were clarities and also concerns that in this portfolio committee, the department presented and clarified those issues. And to the sense that in the presentation of yesterday by the and clarified some of the clauses, so that at least even those stakeholders and individuals that were questioning some of the clauses or the insections to the bills and be clarified. So now Mr. Ngwepe presented this a report to say to ourselves whether we agree with this bill or we don't agree. So the presentation is here, honorable member, so that it must be considered by yourselves before we move to the next item on the clause by clause. We can move to that item of discussing clause by clause, honorable members, if we don't agree with this presentation. I will then take hands of honorable members to speak on this one.
Chair.
Yes, Chair. Honorable Ntuli. Okay. I've also seen that. Okay, it's Honorable Ntuli will speak first, and then it will be Honorable Dr. Kondwe.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, regarding the journey of the portfolio committee with the bills, despite that, I couldn't log in yesterday. Only if there are new things that surfaced yesterday. But according to the journey that we had with the department, public hearings, the department sort of responding to the hearings, etc. I stand here.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ntuli, Honorable Kondwe.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning to everyone on the virtual platform. Chair, I just want to indicate that the DA reserves its position in relation to the desirability of the Public Service Amendment Bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Gondwe. I will wish to get a hand that say that second Honorable Ntuli, that this report on the motion of desirability of the Public Service Amendment Bill is considered. Honorable Maneli, and then followed by Honorable Kibi.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, Honorable Members and everybody on the platform. Chair, I hereby second the desirability of the report. Thank you.
Honorable Kibi.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'm covered by Honorable Maneli. I wanted to second Honorable Ntuli. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. The report is considered by this Portfolio Committee with the reservation of the DA. Thank you very much. We can move to the next item, Mr. Mwepe, clause by clause. But remember, Honorable Members, on the clause by clause presentation, you will input as they present, and we must note that this presentation will not adopt it because we won't finish all these clause today, except that they have, but we'll proceed again next week on Tuesday. And after that, that's when we're gonna come back and deliberate and adopt them. For now, we're just going through the clause by clause if they've got issues. If we're not comfortable with the content or we want something to be edited, you must, or we don't agree with a certain clause, that's what you must do, Honorable Members. And today we won't adopt anything. I think it must, I thought that I must share with yourselves. We're just looking at these clauses. Siyavumelana, Honorable Members.
Agree.
Okay, Chair. May we proceed?
Yes, Mr. Mwepe, proceed.
Okay, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members and colleagues, I think the discussion on the clause by clause, I just wanted to highlight to members that as we'll be discussing clause by clause and making amendments where it is necessary, the Parliamentary Legal Service will then be working on the amendment of the bill itself as members are deliberating in terms of areas that need to be amended on the bill. So it's just to highlight that, but what I'm going to present here will then guide that process as well as we are moving forward. Honorable Members, as you know that we had public hearings, we received the responses from the department together with the Parliamentary Legal Service responses on the Public Service Amendment Bill. So what we have done as the support staff for the committee, we have just included the responses from both the department and the Legal Service on different clauses that are related to each and every clause. So, I would just want to bring members to this page, the last page of the document, where then I say blue color. We say blue color means no amendment to the provision of the bill. So when you see blue colors, it means that then there was nothing to amend on the bill. And then the green color means the committee should then pay attention and deliberate either to insert or to amend on the bill. And the normal color means it was just a motivation, but more emphasis on clause based on the submission. So there's no need on the normal color. There's no need to also to that for the department and the legal service to just explain it thoroughly, so that they are point with regard to what institutions or individual have submitted. So I will start with clause one, which is clause on the definition, honorable chairperson. With regard to clause one, and I believe that members they also have maybe a hard copy of the bill that was circulated with the public here, so that they can be able to follow through. But if they don't have, they can just look at the original clause, what was the original clause, and then the proposal, and then together with what was the responses of the department. Forget about the analysis and the advice. Let's just focus only on original clause, and then look at maybe the proposal or the motivation, and then also look at the responses. So with regards to clause one on the definition, honorable members, there was absolutely nothing to amend on the definition. But however, there were, I think it was just a support of, if you check, supported, and then Parry requested clarification with the role of the president and the premier and the executive. But based on the department responses, I think they found that everything is covered. It was clear on the bill. I think clause two will then answer as well what it, there will be no amendment to be made on with regard to clause one on chair. I will just pause, and then if there's anything, chair, or I don't know if I should just go through the whole document, and then members will come back after I've presented the.
No, entire. We must go clause by clause, Mr. Mwepe.
Okay. Yeah. Then I'll leave it to the members, to you, through you, chairperson.
Yes. Honorable members, that's clause one, the definition. Anything that you want to speak on this clause, honorable members? Any input from this clause?
No input from it, Honorable Chair, it's Kivi.
Honorable Kivi, Honorable Schreiber.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, colleagues. I just have a question for clarity here to be on the same page. So, when this bill talks about executive authority, it always means the president. Is that correct? Except, of course, when it comes to the provincial provincial government, then it means the premier. But can we just get clarity on whether, let me just see if I can figure it out as I'm speaking, Chair. So executive authority in relation to the presidency refers to the president. In relation to a national department or national government component, it means that minister. Then, of course, in the provincial government, it means the premier. And when it refers to a department in the provincial government, that is the relevant MEC. So, this clarity, because the implication would be that in terms of this amendment, we will be changing the formal appointing authority in a government department, because currently, and I would like Mr. Ngwepe to come in on this, currently as the bill stands, it is technically the president or the premier who appoints the, let's say, head of department They are the only executive authorities, and the president essentially appoints every DG in a formal sense. However, the practice has been to delegate that to the relevant minister. However, in terms of the law, it has traditionally been the president. So if I'm reading this amendment correctly, Chair, the implication would be that now, when it comes to a particular national government department, it's no longer the president, it is that particular minister who will appoint the DG. And similarly, when it comes to provincial government, it will be the MEC of that department, not the premier. So can we just get clarity on whether this is the correct understanding, please, Chair? And then I think we can move from there. Thank you.
Mr. Mwepe, where are the your team? Can they respond to me? Okay.
Yeah, if you may allow the role of the executive authority in relation to national and in relation to the province, and if the department can afford an opportunity to just respond to the question.
Mr. Mwep, I'm not sure whether it's myself, my network, or yours. We can't hear you, except honorable members. They can hear your voice, but something is not right with your, it's either your gadget, because your voice is a little bit down.
Oh, okay.
Can you repeat what you have said? I know that you have heard most of the question of Honorable Scriber.
To respond to the question, and then I will add if there's anything that I need to add together with the legal service of Parliament.
Chair, Mr. Ngwepe's network is a bit a bit skewed. We can't hear him clearly. But I wonder if my colleagues are getting him.
Okay, let us take them. Thank you very much, Honorable Ntuli. Yes, there's a problem with I think his gadget or low shedding, wherever he is, but there's a hand that I think they want to speak on the same issue of Ms. Naidu.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to the team members. Good morning to the Chair and colleagues. Perhaps, Chair, if you allow me, I can perhaps try to explain the provision for Honorable Schreiber. Currently, the definition of executive authority is exactly how Mr. Schreiber just has read it out. What we are doing in the amendment is we are seeking to add to that definition. So the definition stays exactly the same, but we are adding a definition. Who is the executive authority in the case of a head of department? And that's where we clarify that the definition of EA in respect of a head of department or a head of a national or provincial, a national department or a national government component means the president. A head of a office of the premier means the head of the office of the premier, provincial department or provincial government means the relevant premier. So we are retaining the remainder of the provisions, which says that in respect of the presidency, EA means the president. In respect of a national department or a national government component, it means the cabinet. Means the minister responsible for that portfolio. And in respect of the office of a premier or a provincial government or government component within the premier's portfolio, it means also then the premier. And in respect of a provincial department, it then means the MEC responsible. And in respect of the office of the Public Service Commission, it also then means the chairperson of the commission. So we are adding a definition. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Ms. Naidu. I think honorable members, the clarification by Ms. Naidu from the question of Honorable Schreiber, it's clear, and I see a hand of Dr. Konde.
Thank you very much, Chair. I was just going to thank Ms. Naidu for clarifying this, because there was a concern raised during the oral and written submissions that this distinction doesn't come across very clearly in relation to the bill in its current form. So thank you very much, Ms. Naidu.
Thank you. The next... Yes, Mr. Mwepe. Let's hope that your network problem is now resolved.
No, I've just connected to network.
Okay.
Yeah. So now we move. I believe that clause one, we are fine, Honorable Chair, on the first. With regard to clause two, on the powers and the duties of the executive authority, we seek to amend Section 3.7 of the Principal Act. What the department has responded, again, here there will be no any amendment, but it was just to put more emphasis on the on what the emphasis on what emanates from the public hearing, by saying that the bill amends the definition of the executive authority to provide for a definition in relation to the head of department appointment and other career incidents. And the bill further provides for the distinction between the role of the president or premier or minister in the MEC. And I think that this matter is partly was covered by Ms. Naidu on her response with regards to the powers and duties of the executive. So that's the essence of the first the clause one, and with regards to clause 3.9, Chair, that's where then the department agreed to the proposal that the with executive authority of a department and must to be inserted in the subsection 3A A. Figure two. So that's what the department agreed on. If members the department has agreed.
We've lost Mr. Mwepe.
Hello, Chair.
Yes, you are now. We are also missing your voice again.
Okay. I don't know, because I've tried to connect from the other. Okay. What I'm saying is, the only amendments that the department agreed to, not to say the only amendment, but they have agreed that we should expand the section 3.9A. Roman figure two, the proposal that the with executive authority of a department, just to insert of a department, and the way it says may, then we'll replace it may with must, report such failure to the president or the premier. It's on page, if you have got the act, I mean the bill itself, is on page 3, where we'll then insert such words in the bill. So that's what what the department have agreed on to expand it further with regard to the. That's exactly those two. Hello, Chair.
Yes.
Okay.
That's the clause to honorable members. And if you have heard when Mr. Ngwepe started this presentation was agreeing that we're told that as this portfolio committee must pay attention on the greens. So as per the outcome of this clause, the powers and the duties of the executive authority, the SAWO proposed the word executive of the department and also must to be inserted on the section 3. Lantiga subsection 9A2. So can you then, honorable member, speak on that clause if you want to speak on the green? If you agree with this Lantiga outcome or the green Lantika this green point to this clause, honorable members. I'm not sure whether Honorable Kondwe, your hand is a legacy hand.
No, it's not a legacy hand, Chair. I want to speak to this particular clause, please.
Sure.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. We are happy with the amendments, you know, the subsequent amendments that the department has made, because there were concerns, raised in this regard. But Chair, there appears to be no provisions dealing with instances where the EA, the executive authority rather, fails in the exercise of these duties, and provisions be included in the bill. So, you know, the clause addresses instances, where the HOD fails in the exercise, but there isn't a similar provision in relation to instances where the executive authority fails in the exercise of their duties and powers. Chair, are you there? Chair? Yes, I am. Thank you.
Okay. So you are agreeing with what has been written there? That's what you are saying.
I agree, but we still have concerns around this particular clause.
What is the real? What is your concern?
I said, in as much as we appreciate that the clause deals with instances where the HOD may fail in the exercise of their duties, but there is no similar provision dealing with instances where the executive authority fails in the exercise of these duties and powers. And we would recommend that such a provision be included in the bill. Perhaps
executive authority, you mean if whether the MBC or the Premier or the President, that's what you're saying?
Yes.
If they fail?
Yes. Perhaps Mr. Okay. Ngwepe and Ms. Naidu can respond.
Okay. No, that's fine, but you don't have a problem on the proposal itself.
No, I do not have a problem with the subsequent amendments made. I'm happy with those. I'm just concerned that There isn't a similar provision applying to executive authorities where they fail in the exercise of their duties.
Okay. No, thank you very much. And I've seen the hand of... Okay. Just before Ms. Naidu, thank you very much, Dr. Kondwe.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think one would welcome the department welcome the incisions that the department had infected, that is, in terms of the and also welcome. Thank you
very much, Honorable Ntuli. Ms. Naidu will respond to the concern by Honorable Kondwe in the event that I think she's referring to the MEC Premier or the President, if then there is that issue. Can you just respond, Mr. Knight?
Thank you, Chair. I want to refer Honorable Dr. Gonwe to Section 16A3 of the Public Service Act. There is currently a provision in the Act which says that the Minister, and that's the Minister, may report to the Cabinet or through the relevant Premier to the Executive Council of the relevant province any non-compliance by an executive authority with any provision of these with a provision of this Act or a determination made thereunder. So if there's non-compliance by an executive authority in terms of the Public Service Act, there are provisions within Section 16 capital A to deal with those matters. Thank you so much.
Chair Mantuli?
Yes,
Chair Mantuli, I wanted to further say we understand that the bill will lay the foundation, but also regulations. Now it's good that Ms. Naidu has referred us where the how part of the principal. Thank you.
No, I think, thank you very much, Honorable Members. I think Ms. Naidu's response clarifies the concern of Honorable Kondwe. We are then moving to the next clause. Mr. Mwe.
Next. This is the authorization of the Act by relocating Section 3.8 to Section 5. Here, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, the Department extent or public hearings. They have indicated that clause 3 of the bill, which seeks to amend Section 5 of the period of the 3 years, is a Municipal Act. Therefore, the 3-year period is to the Prescription Act, and the random will be clarified. Will be clarified according, meaning this provision is in the Principal Act, where the 3-year period is being provided. There's no need, Honorable, to amend clause clause 3 is by the department and the legal service of the parliament have said yesterday they didn't provide anything with regard to clause 3 of the bill.
The clause 3 members, I think there's nothing that we can discuss, and I that we can move from clause 3 to the next clause.
Honorable Mugweba, I got my hand up.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes. Although we take the point that the 3-year period in that particular clause is aligned or in line with the provisions of the Prescription Act in relation to civil matters, can we get on the, perhaps this period shouldn't be where any decision be taken with regards to acts of criminality? Ms. Clare,
Honorable Gondo, you are not sure. Can't just.
All right. My
with due respect.
Through you, Chair. My apologies.
I don't have a co-chair in this.
No problem. Apologies. Through you.
Okay. I do anything to this clause? What Dr. Gondwe referred as the outcome on your last column of the 3-year period?
Thank you, Chair. I think it's important to note that this provision currently exists in the Public Service Act. It's in 3.9, Section 3.8. What we are doing, because we amended Section 3.8, Section 3 itself, we're moving Section 3.8 into Section 4, and we now call it the Section 9. So I think it's important to note the context. Is that on the issue of 3 years, what this provision it seeks to allow an executive authority or a DOD to deal with employment matter arising from a former employee. So somebody who is no longer in this, they've left. And saying in this provision is that we allow the EA or HOD to deal with that matter, to finalize that matter within a period of 3 years after which the employee left. And what we are saying is that employee leaves, they can basically stay. And that doesn't criminalize at all. Thanks.
Honorable members, are you then comfortable with the clause 3? We move to the next clause.
Yes, Honorable Chair.
Yes, Chair, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Clause 4.
Okay, clause 4 deals with the administrative powers. As you know, that the bill seeks to. Power, administrative power from the executive of, to the accounting of. So, I think the issue was the with regard to the responses from the department with regard to clause 4. They said to amend section 7, the head of the department agreed to actions or undue interference may lodge a in terms of section 35 Public Service Act to the Public Service Commission, and the process for recruitment is prescribed through regulations, and the role of the PSC in recruitment will be considered in the development of the regulations noting that the PSC has a constitutional oversight responsibility. So it was just, that the department was just emphasizing that grievances existing, if an employee has gotten a, the employees have raised that grievance through public service commission, and so the public service commission play a role in the public system. So that's the, what, but that didn't mean that we have to do clause four, the devolution of us.
Chairperson Manduli agreed on clause four.
Very much, honorable. I also hand off honorable Gondwa.
Thank you very much, honorable chairperson. Chair, there was a concern, although you proposed section 70BI requires an audit communication and debates, there's a clear role mediating this between provincial departments. So to recommend that the head of the office should be responsible for the an intergovernmental relation between provincial departments in the event of this, an express provision to this be made in the bill. And there was another proposal that section 736 be to effect, to give a better effect around NDP and the professionalization. The point was also, Chairperson, that the role of the head service in supporting appointment processes and career provision of senior public is established, and this head of service and powerful of additional protection needed to ensure the head of the public service performs their role with competence and integrity, which means that the bill should consider elaborating on fit and proper standards and merit-based requirements for potential appointees to this office. Chair, another concern was also raised that the bill does not provide for the PSC to play a supporting role in supporting these recruitment and appointment processes. We do note the department's response to this letter concern in providing that the role of the PSC in the recruitment and appointment processes will be considered during the development of the regulations. But we feel strongly, Chairperson, that the PSC and other independent experts need to support the recruitment and appointment processes, especially at very senior management level positions, and their role in this guard should be provided for in the bill. In other words, Chairperson, the bill should therefore mandate the PSC to play a critical role in these recruitment and appointment processes. And then the regulations can then expand on the role of the PSC in this regard. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, honorable members. I'm not sure, Ms. Naidu, if you want to say something to the issues that just that has been raised now by Dr. Gondwa. But however, we must also note, honorable members, that there is also the Public Service Commission bill that is coming before us. But however, also, it must be noted by this portfolio committee that it's us who have been saying that the PSC must always play their role as an independent entity, and so that oversight by them to the executive. But however, I understand that also, it must be noted by this committee that when Mr. Ngwebe started his presentation, we were given, I think, three colors where we must pay attention, especially on the green ones. That's where we must be able to input, honorable members. But however, I will give Ms. Naidu to respond on that issues. I understand also when the legal team presented yesterday, they spoke eloquently in terms of the role of the Public Service Commission to oversee the executive. But however, I will give Ms. Naidu to Gondwe. I know she's very passionate about it, the involvement of the PSC in the recruitment process. And but I must give yourself, Ms. Naidu, to say something.
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps I want to just speak to the issue around the role of the head of department in a province. There is a section that currently exists in the Public Service Act, which is in section 7D of the bill. So if you look at clause 4 and 7D, that particular clause provides for a what the role of the head of department in the presidency would do, but at a provincial level. That provision has always been in the law. So it exists currently for the HOD in a office of a premier to play that central key role that is similar to that played by the DG in the presidency. So I hope that clarifies the matter. I think with issues around who plays a role in recruitment processes, I agree with the chair. I think that matter will come through either the Public Service Commission Bill or during the drafting of regulations. And I think it's important to also ensure that as we go through these processes, we don't create challenges for the Public Service Commission in exercising that oversight role. In respect of the competencies of any employee, whether it's the HOD or other employees within the administration, I think what's important to note is that in Section 9, it allows for the appointment of persons into departments on terms and conditions that are prescribed. And that usually is the terms and conditions that are prescribed in regulations. I think it also makes it easier to deal with quite extensive. You are not limited to certain measures. Those measures can go beyond being fit and proper. It can exceed to qualifications, experience, inherent requirements, which it currently does. But we will take the note on the fit and proper issues and have regard to them in the regulations. I think recently also, and I want to draw attention to it, recently we amended the public service regulations and we've included a requirement for HODs in terms of fit and proper persons generally. Thank you so much.
Honorable members, I think you have been clarified, and we are moving to the next clause. Yes, clause 5.
Yeah. Same here, Chairperson, clause 5. That deals with the head of department to appoint a person. There were no amendments suggested based on what we have received through the written submission and oral. So the department, together with the Parliamentary Legal Service, they've seen that there's nothing to amend here. So I believe the committee will also the concur with what the department and the parliamentary legal services are saying, but it's up to you, Chair, and the member, the honourable members, to discuss clause 5 that seeks to amend section 9 of the Principal Act to provide the head of the department with the authority to appoint a person in a department. So there was nothing
that was. Chairman, do
Honorable Ntuli and Honorable Kibi.
Thank you, Chairperson. We welcome clause 5 as it is. We covered as it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ntuli, Honorable Kibi.
Thank you, I second Honorable Ntuli. We welcome clause 5. As there are no amendments. Thank you.
I'm moving to clause 6, Chair. Clause 6 then deals with the head of department and employee probation. Again, Honorable Chair, and the major issue here was the area that I think it was Nehau, where they've raised the issue of contradicting other legislation, and the department responded very well on this aspect that the in case where there's a conflict between the Public Service Act and other laws governing the employment, like for an example, the SAPS Act, the SAPS Act will then take precedence over the Public Service Act. Same thing like with the teachers, I think the Teachers Act will then say take precedence over the Public Service Act. So it was just to clarify whether this provision won't create conflict with other existing laws, but then the department answered by saying that, you know, then the precedence would be the let's say for an example, with the SAPS, it would be the SAPS Act, and with the teachers, it would be the Teachers Act. So there was nothing to amend, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you. Any inputs, honourable members, to the clause 6?
Manduli, we agreed upon clause 6, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. We support it.
Okay, clause 7 deals with the transfer of employees. And again, well, we have received submissions around this particular clause. So, but based on what we have received, the department together with the parliamentary legal services, they didn't see anything to amend based on. Remember, one of the things to say that this transfer the PAMA should only deal with the transfer instead of the Public Service Act, but it was well articulated. So there is no any amendment, Chairperson, with regard to clause 7. Yes.
Well, fine, that one, two, Chair, it's Kibi here.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kibi. There's a hand of Dr. Kondwe on Dr. Kondwe.
Yes, thank you very much, Chair. Chair, we are still concerned that, you know, this clause proposes to amend Section 14 of the Principal Act, which deals with the transfer of employees. But at the same time, Section 5 of PAMA, of the PAMA Act of 2014, also deals with the transfer of employees within or between institutions. And this is confusing. It's not clear why the two statutes must deal with the same subject matter and in an inconsistent manner. We therefore propose that only one statute deals with the subject of employee transfers to avoid potential inconsistencies in interpretation and application of the bill, and that these two statutes are rationalized. This confusion really needs to be cleared up because I don't think it was adequately addressed by the department in their responses to the various submissions that were made on the bill. Thank you, Chair.
The President, Mantuli, I second Honorable
Kibu. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Ms. Naidu, can you clarify Dr. Kondo spoke about on the Clause 7 of the two bills that speaks to this issue? Employees, what is the difference, and or can you help us, and so that also Dr. Kondwe been clarified, because she's saying there's confusion because both bills speaks on this issue.
Thank you, Chairperson, if I may. So during the consultation process, we had initially envisaged that Section 14 of the Public Service Act would be repealed, and we would include provisions in the PAMA itself that will deal with transfers within the public service. But during those consultations, there were challenges in terms of how it was managed. It is the Municipal Systems Act, which allows for transfers within municipalities. There's also Educators Act, Correctional Services, SAPS, all of the sectoral legislation that also deals with transfers within the sectors. So what we resolved ourselves to do in this particular amendments is to allow the Public Service Act to continue to manage transfers within the public service, which is between national and provincial government, between national departments themselves, and within and between provincial departments themselves. So it deals with just employees in the public service. What we did with the PAMA is that we allowed for where there isn't currently legislation, and that's to enable transfers from the public service, which is national and provincial government, to municipal, to local government, and vice versa, as well as to enable transfers between municipalities. So currently there isn't laws that do the latter. So what we did with PAMA is we closed the gap that exists in existing legislation, and we've retained all existing legislation, so there wasn't created in the system. If that answers the question. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Naidu. Honorable members, are you comfortable with the clarification of Ms. Naidu on this clause? And obvious the clause in the PAMA bill.
Agreed, Chair.
Yes, thank you, Chair.
The proceed, Chairperson, with clause 8, I believe that members are agreed with clause 7, so I'm proceeding to clause 8.
Yes, Mr. Mapp, we're in clause 8.
Yeah, okay. Clause that deals with continuation of employment Chairperson, there were no amendments suggested on this. Even you can even see on the public hearings, we didn't receive a lot of submissions with regard to this laws. I mean, everyone is concurs with clause 8.
Manduli Chairperson, clause 8 accepted as it is.
Thank you, Honorable Kondwe. Thank you, Honorable Kondwe. Then, Honorable Kondwe.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to indicate that we reserve our position not to comment on this amendment, but I would like clarity on whether Section 19 of has repealed Section 14 of the Principal Act.
TB, I support Honorable Ntuli, Honorable Chair, thank you.
Honorable, thanks, Honorable Members. Honorable Kondo, you have said you are reserving yourselves to comment on this clause, but you further ask for clarity on this, on the same clause. And I think we must move to this clause because already you have indicated that you are reserving yourselves for commenting.
Yeah, I'm asking for clarity. I'm not commenting. I'm just asking for clarity.
But you have first reserved.
Because the department was supposed to provide this clarification and it didn't in its responses to the submissions.
But as your first point, you have reserved commenting to this clause.
Getting clarity is not necessarily a comment, Chair. Please don't stifle debate, Honorable Mgweba.
Okay, that's fine. Now,
thank you, Chair. So in our responses, we tried to clarify how Section 14 was going to operate. Clause 8, Chair, I just want to clarify, deals with Section 14A, not Section 14. But I will answer on the Section 14, which was the section before that. What the PAMA does currently, it repeals Section 14, and that's correct. But during these, and we've never brought that repeal into operation. So Section 14 of the in place. What we have done through the amendment of PAMA is to reenact Section 14. If you look at the PAMA bill, you will see a reenactment of Section 14. So Section 14 remains, and what we are saying is we amended as per Clause 7, which we've passed now. But Section 14A is slightly different. There wasn't a repeal of Section 14A. There's now just an amendment before the committee. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Naidu. We are moving to Clause 9.
Yeah, Chair, Clause 9 deals with the retirement and retention of service. Based on what the department has responded to, there are no amendments with regard to the clauses. Meaning the clauses will remain as they are based on what has been submitted. There's nothing here to amend.
Manduli Chairperson, accept clause 9 as it is. Thank you.
Supported, Honorable TB. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. There's no hands, further hands for this from this for this clause. Clause 10.
Clause 10, Chair, deals with the prohibition of shorter notice of resignation. Based on what has been submitted, the department has together with the legal service of parliament, they haven't seen anything to amend here on the clause. So the clause will remain as it is unless there's something from members.
Mantuli, Chairperson, accepted as it is, Chair. Thank you.
Comfortable, Chair. Keep it here.
Noted, Honourable Members, Clause 11.
Clause 11, Chair, deals with the power to dismiss an employee. Again, based on the submissions, the department responded that there is nothing to amend. Based on the submissions, Honourable Chair, with regard to Clause 11.
Keep it here. Thanks, Chair. So accept it as it is. Thank you.
Manduli here, Chair, supporting comment. Honourable Kibi.
Honourable Kondwa.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, it was submitted that the devolution of power to dismiss, especially in the absence of delegation by the Premier, means that an EA whom an HOD must support and assist would not have any power to take disciplinary action against that HOD. The effect of this devolution is to limit an executive authority in exercising oversight and accountability. And Chair, therefore, in the absence of a Premier, an EA would not have any power to take disciplinary action against his or her HOD if the proposed amendment of Section 7(1)(a) and B is pursued. It was therefore the clause is reconsidered and redrafted. Chair, we would recommend that these concerns be taken into consideration and redrafted. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. Noted, Honorable Kondwa. But I will request Ms. Naidu to speak on the redrafting of this clause. Ms. Naidu.
Thank you, Chair.
Apologies. Apologies, Chair. Can just before we get a response, could we take all the hands before that? Otherwise, I'm going to have to come back after the response.
No. Sorry, Honorable Striper, I didn't see your hand.
Sure.
You raised your hand when I was going to give Ms. Knight to respond to what Honorable Kondi spoke about. I'm always no check hands from Honorable Members, and I will request that in the next Lantika, you must just raise your hand so that I note you. Okay, before Ms. Naidu, Honorable Striper.
Yeah, thanks very much, Chair. Apologies to Ms. Naidu as well. I just wanted to build on what the Honorable Gondwe says there, and I think there's an elegant or easy solution here that doesn't require extensive redrafting at all, but that just stipulates, even in the same clause or as an additional clause, just makes clear what I think we all would assume is the case. And that is that when it comes to dismissal or discipline, et cetera, of an HOD, that power would clearly lie with the executive authority. So in other words, we are differentiating here between officials below the position of DG or HOD who will be dismissed or managed in this way by that DG or HOD. But when it comes to the particular head of that department, who is appointed in terms of this amendment and accounts to the executive authority, I think we can just very simply add a small amendment, an addition that says that matters affecting the head of the department or the are vested in the executive authority. So I don't think it's overly complicated at all. But that clarity will somehow claim that only they can discipline themselves or dismiss themselves, which is clearly irrational. Thank you, Chair.
Uh, Ms. Naidu.
Thank you very much, Chair. I want to reiterate, I think the policy position that's being taken in respect of HODs is that all appointment and career matters relating to HODs, including dismissal, are dealt with by either the Premier or the President. That's throughout the bill. That's how the bill's been crafted with that policy in mind. The reason and the rationale for allowing that process to happen is that you create an intermediary in terms of the President and the Premier who are distanced to some degree from the administration to deal with matters objectively and to ensure that there's no, and maybe abuse is too strong a word, but that there's no challenges in terms of the HOD being compromised in their ability to do their work. So when we spoke earlier about the other comments that came in, there was concern that the EA doesn't have or can interfere in the administration of the HOD and the ability of the HOD to do the work. Hence, the entire framework is hinged on the President and the Premier exercising authority over HOD. That does not mean, and the way we've framed Section 3 and 7 of the Public Service Act through these amendments is to require certain things to happen between the HOD and the EA in terms of accountability and running the administration. So I think it's important to just note the policy on which the whole Public Service Act hinges. And that's to Premier to deal with matters relating to the HOD. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Knight. There's a head of Honorable Striper again.
Chair, I do apologize, but I may be very slow. So I'm going to ask this again so that we have absolute clarity. Because it sounds to me like Ms. Naidu is now potentially contradicting the discussion we had on the definition clause right up front. So again, then, for clarity's sake, the amendment that is being inserted in this bill in the definition speaks about a definition of executive authority that is differentiated when it talks about government, national government departments, minister heading that particular portfolio. When it speaks about the presidency, it obviously speaks about the president being the EA. At provincial level, it speaks about the premier in the office of the premier. And in the case of provincial departments, it speaks about the MEC being the executive authority. Now, if that is the definition of executive authority, then it follows from that that everywhere where this bill speaks of executive authorities, it will be in the particular context of that department or of that provincial government department, which would mean that issues like dismissal or other career incident else that Ms. Naidu speaks of would be managed by the particular minister, not by the president or by the premier in the case of a province, but by the executive authority based on this new definition. So it seems to me there's a few options of what's actually happening here. The first is that wherever we're talking about executive authorities in this bill now, all of those references would actually be to the ministers or the MECs in the appropriate case. Or alternatively, it may be that this bill is saying that only in the case of appointments would the executive authority be the minister. In other words, the person appointing a DG would be the minister, not the president, but that issues around this would then somehow be vested in the president rather than the minister. So again, I would ask Chair for clarity on this. What is an executive authority in terms of this bill, and which person then, in the case of a national government department as an example, who is the executive authority there, and who would be responsible for dismissing an HOD or disciplining an DG in that particular case? Is it the president or is it the minister? And if it is the president, then I'm worried about the consistency that we're seeing here in this bill. Thanks, Chair.
Ms. Naidoo.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe I'm going to give it another go. So in terms of the definition of executive authority, Dr. Schreiber, you are correct. The definition says that in respect of a department, the EA is the minister. In respect of the presidency, it's the president. In respect of the commission, it's the chairperson. In respect of a provincial department, it's the MEC. And ministers in respect of national department. But the definition goes a bit further, and it distinguishes for a separate definition for HODs. And it says, in respect of HODs, at a national level, it's the president, and in respect of HODs at a provincial level, it's the premier. So the definition separates HODs from the normal course of things. Then if you read that in line with Section 12, you'll see Section 12 specifically, they also then says it's the president and the premier who deal with career incidents and appointments of HODs. And then if you go further into the bill, in Section 16B, you will see there as well that it is who are authorized to dismiss HODs in terms of or for misconduct proceedings. Then if you look at it goes further and it talks to the dismissal of the HOD being subject to or any employee being subject to 16B. So throughout the Act, it's consistent. Definitions 16B, 17 all relate in respect of HODs. The reference to EA will always be the president or the premier. I hope I've clarified. Thanks.
No, thanks, Ms. Knight. I think you've clarified members, and we are then moving to clause 12.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Again, clause 12 deals with the remunerative work outside employment. Based on what the department has responded, based on the clause 12 of the bill, consideration of an appeal process for employee performing other remunerative work. Section 30 of the Public Service Act provides that when employee performs other remunerative work, the employee must seek the permission of the head of the department. The view is that no appeal process is necessary under these circumstances, that the initial decision should be binding unless reviewed in a competent forum. And then the bill does not seek to amend the period as contained in the Principal Act, and the period was regarded as a reasonable, taking into account that an employee may have to make a decision on the other remunerative work with delays. So that's what the department, I think the essence of this is that each and every employee has to request a permission to the head of the department prior conducting any business outside the public service. There was nothing to amend, Honorable Chairperson, but for the department just to elaborate on the clause and motivate why this should not be taken as it is without being amended. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Chair Mantuli, accept it as it is. Thank you.
Second, yeah. Chair.
I can see also the hand of thanks. There's a hand of Honorable Ntuli have accepted the clause, and also I've heard the voice of Honorable KB, Honorable Gonda.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We still remain concerned that in the event that a head of a department were to make a decision not to grant this approval for an employee to perform this remunerative work, an employee would have no form of recourse. I'm not entirely sure what the problem is with including an appeal measure would be. And we still remain concerned that the period of 30 days is insufficient, especially where the nature of the work concerned may have an apparent conflict of interest or interfere with the efficient or effective performance of an employee's functions, and that is the applying employee's functions. We would therefore suggest that the period of time provided for before the deeming provision is applied must be changed to give more time to the HOD, to make a consideration before the provision, the deeming provision becomes effective. Chair, we therefore recommend that, these concerns be seriously looked into and the period of time be made longer. Number one, an appeal measure included in this particular clause. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Naidu.
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps I want to start at the appeal process. If we put in place an appeal measure, we are going to overburden the institutions. Already, there are so many cumbersome appeal processes. This provision is about an employee choosing, and I think we must also look at the rationalization framework. This provision is about an employee who is employed in the public service and who is requesting to do outside remunerative work, so work that is not part of the duties of the employee. The principle is that it's the HOD who is best placed as the authority, as the employing authority, to deal with whether that outside remunerative work will either result in a conflict of interest or will undermine the responsibilities of that employee. The reasons won't change. So on an appeal process, there has to be some sort of value add. Something has to change in the system to allow an appeal to give you a different outcome. So that's the one issue. It's just about overburdening and what exactly then is the outcome. In terms of recourse, I think we must be very clear. Employees choose to be employed in the public service, and employees can similarly choose not to be employed in the public. If another job requires employees or benefits employees better than being in the public service, that's also an option. But I think the most practical one is that we've had this provision for many years now in the Public Service Act. There has not been any challenges in respect of approvals or otherwise of these matters. So there isn't something that we're fixing that's broken. The system looks like it works. We haven't had challenges from that perspective, from an implementation perspective. The second issue on the time period, the 30 days was initially there was a provision that said you can't do outside remunerative work, but it was thinking that you can't do outside remunerative work unless you had the permission. And during those discussions, the deeming provision came into the Public Service Act. And thus far, again, there hasn't been issues around the 30 days in terms of compliance. And I think the 30 days has been linked to a reasonable period within which a person would be expected to take up this outside remunerative work. But again, I think it's well within the competence of the portfolio committee to look at a longer period, but I think it must not be an unreasonable period because you would find that employees are disadvantaged in that process. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Naidu. We are then moving to clause 13.
Chair, clause 13 deals with the paying out of revenue, which seeks to amend section 31 of the Principal Act to allow the head of the department in an exceptional circumstance to approve the paying out of revenue of an amount to that salary allowance and whatever. So, but there was nothing, Chairperson, on this particular amendment. There was nothing to amend, if I may say, and even if you look at the number of submissions that we have received on this, the institution or the individual didn't seems to be interested on the clause, so there's nothing to amend. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. We accept it as it is.
Seconded, Chair.
Which means all of us as this committee are comfortable with clause 13 or are satisfied. We are moving now to clause 14.
Yeah, clause 14 deals with temporarily perform other functions. So here I think the bill seek to amend section 32 of the Principal Act to provide that the head of department may direct employee to temporarily perform other functions within the department. And based on what the department has responded, they've indicated that in terms of clause 14, there was a concern that the provision for person to act in post will serve as a deterrent to filling the post. An acting arrangement, a short-term arrangement aimed at filling of the interim gap where posts are being filled. The deletion of this provision will create a vacuum where certain functions will not be filled, where posts are vacant and may compromise service delivery. Concern that Section 32, 2B, Roman Figure 2 is impractical to require that the premier must be consulted when appointing an acting HOD for a day or for a short leave period. Section 32.2b, Roman Figure 2, which requires the president and premier to be consulted, is only in the case of a vacant post and does not apply to bureaus of the head of the department. For an example, if I'm on leave and I'm the acting, I'm the head of, it means that the there is no need to ask to request permission from the premier for an acting over just a shorter period. That's the essence of what the department is trying to respond on. Yeah, so there are no amendments, Chair, with regards to this. It was just to elaborate the practicality around how this laws will be implemented. Thanks, Chair.
Give it, Chair, we are comfortable. Thank you.
Mantuli, person. Mantuli here, Chair. Seconding, Honorable Kibi.
There's no hands on the clause 14, which means then we move to clause 15.
Yeah, clause 15 deals with the procedure for grievances. 15 seeks to amend section 35 of the Principal Act to provide that the Minister for the Public Service and Administration shall be responsible to determine the procedure to be utilized when employees refer grievances within the department. And again, Chair, there was nothing major here in terms of recommending that the committee should amend the clause, unless if members have seen something, they can raise that through you, Chair. So there's nothing to amend. Even the department and the legal service of the parliament also, they didn't see anything to amend in this.
Thank you, Chairperson Mantuli. Accept that as it is.
Seconded, Chair, give it here.
There's a hand of, thank you very much, Honorable. There's a hand also of Honorable Gondo.
Chair, thank you very much. We do know that there were concerns raised that this clause limits the Constitution, which deals with political rights. But we are satisfied that when the socioeconomic impact assessment was conducted by the Office of the Presidency, it did not raise any concerns in relation to the constitutionality of this particular amendment, and neither did Parliament's Legal Services Office. We therefore support this amendment here, but we would suggest that it be widened to extend beyond include those employees who are members of executive committees, that is the NEC, PEC, or REC, at various political levels. And would also recommend that this prohibition be extended to middle management. Thank you, Chair.
I'm not sure, Honourable Gondo, I thought that you are still in clause 15, your hand was raised for clause. The last statement now is in clause 16. Or
I'm in clause 16. I'm referring to clause 16.
Oh, you are raising your hand for clause 16, which yes, means ma'am. For clause 15, you are comfortable.
I didn't say anything in relation to clause 15. I am now referring to clause 16.
Okay. That's fine. Any takers, honorable members, on the clause? In fact, Mr. Mwepe didn't even say anything about clause 16. And already.
He is still going for clause 16. We're dealing with clause
15. Okay, Mr. Mwepe, clause 16.
In terms of clause 16, even from the department, I think there were the responses from the department, they were just trying to elaborate further the public service amendment bill together with the Municipal System Act with regard to the prohibition of HOD and employee who are reporting to the HOD. So there was that discussion around that. So as Honorable Gwanda has already touched on it, there was nothing, Chair, to amend with regards to those provisions on the amendment bill. So I'm not going to read everything in light of time. So, but then there was nothing to amend. It was just the department trying to provide more meat to this particular aspect, as it was raised sharply by those who came for the public hearings.
Mantuli, Chairperson, accepted as it is, clause 16.
Thank you, Honorable Mantuli and Honorable Gondo.
Chair, just to reiterate what I said earlier about expanding the provisions, they be widened to extend beyond HODs and include those employees who are members of executive committees, that is members of an NEC, PEC, or REC. And we would also recommend that this prohibition be extended to middle management. My apologies, Chair. I thought we were already on clause 16 when I made this input.
Okay.
I second Honorable Julie. Thank you.
Honorable Mgwema, are you there? Honorable Mgwema?
Yes, I'm here.
Through you, perhaps Ms. Naidu can speak to that expansion.
I'm going there.
Thank you, ma'am.
Ms. Naidu.
Chair, on the first issue of expanding the limitation on other employees within the public service, the difficulty is that when we started this process on the bill, so the first draft of the bill created a total prohibition on all this political office. Okay. But as we went through the process, there were constitutional issues that were raised that required the bill to be changed. So it was during the consultation processes that the bill was changed to limit the prohibition to only HODs and those reporting to HODs. So, and that was simply to deal with the constitutional challenges that were arising during the process. I think what we see playing out in the Municipal Systems Act is also a challenge in terms of the total prohibition. The only justification we could, even getting to those reporting to HODs, was seen as a stretch. But we were able to justify why those two tiers of the public service should fall within this particular prohibition. Simply because decision making happens at that, and the usual conflict of interest will happen at that level. If there's a conflict of interest that happens lower levels, there's a requirement under the public service regulations and the codes of conduct, etc., to require any matter should recuse themselves. So from a constitutional perspective, I think we must just be very careful that we don't write things into the law and then we have challenges in the constitutional courts once the bill is passed into law, trying to override these provisions. So for purposes of this particular amendment, we have done extensive work in terms of finding the justification to limit constitutional rights. And we have done it in the manner that's before the court, before Parliament. And if we see, and if we are to go further than that, we would then have to justify it. And we were unable to justify it in under those circumstances. Chair, with regard to extending the definition to the entire NEC, I would be guided by the portfolio committee and perhaps the discussions on how that would play out. I think, again, we just have to be very careful constitutionally that we don't undermine responsibilities. I think the bigger challenge might be if those other members of the NECs of political parties don't play a substantive role in decision-making and then are prejudiced when they are employed in these positions in the public service. There might not necessarily be a conflict of interest to create a rule that touches them as well. Thanks.
Thanks, Ms. Naidu. And I think your last point have clarified the concern from honorable members. And thank you very much for moving to clause 17.
Yeah, clause 17, Chair, deals with the granting an employee salary higher than minimum amounts. The clause 17 seeks to amend section 37 of the Principal Act to permit head of the department if it is allowed by regulation to the extent prescribed to grant the, an employee salaries higher than the minimum amounts of the 15 the appropriate salary of the applicable salary scales. So we then the department in their responses couldn't get anything to amend from the submissions that we have received through the public hearings. And I think even the Parliament Legal Services didn't provide anything with regard to the amendment of this law. So there would be no amendment on this particular domain. It's clear, Honorable Chair.
Clause 17, honourable members, an input.
Thank you, Chair Mantuli. Accepted as it is, clause 17.
Give it, Chair, seconded. Thank you.
Okay, Chair, with regards to clause 18, deals with the wrongly granted remuneration, the laws seek to amend section 38.2b, Roman figure 1 of the Principal Act, which deals with the recovery of remuneration that was wrongly granted to an employee. And the department have okay, here is the, not the department, it's the Parliamentary Legal Service. They've sort of rephrased the clauses. Actually, is what they are recommending to the Portfolio Committee in the bill, but this is what they've recommended to the committee based on what exists in the bill. So the rephrasing, honorable members, read as follows. That proposed amendment clause 18B of the Public Service Amendment Bill, that B, by the substitution in section, in subsection 2 for paragraph B of the following paragraph B, I think, is still in the same spirit with what the department has tabled through the bill, but then they've just rephrased the wordings. So being overpaid or received any such other benefit not due to him or her. And then I, an accounting officer, may recover such overpayment from the employee salaries if the accounting officer and employee agree in writing. And AA on the amount of the overpayment or on a reasonable period for the repayment of an amount of overpayment, and C, on the amount to be deducted from the employee salary, either in full or in monthly installment, taking into consideration the employee income and the current financial obligations, and provided that the total deduction is not more than one quarter of an employee's monthly salary. Then they've also provided, I think it was just two options. The other option was to say an accounting officer may, in the absence of agreement as contemplated in sub paragraph Roman figure one, recover such amount of overpayment by way of legal proceedings. Or an accounting officer shall, in the event that the person is no longer in the employ of a department, recover such amount by way of deduction from any person by the state or by way of legal proceedings. And Roman figure five, an accounting officer shall, in the event that the employee is in the employ of another department, request the accounting officer of that other department to recover in the manner contemplated in subparagraph Roman figure one or Roman figure two, the overpayment made, or that the Roman figure five, that the other benefit shall be discontinued or withdrawn from a current date, but the employee consent shall have the right to be compensated by the state for any patrimonial loss which he or she has suffered as a result of that discontinuation or withdrawal. Chair, I will request that if my colleague from Legal Service there also here, just to clarify on this before you allow members to talk on it, Honorable Chairperson.
Chair Manduli. Chair, yes. I think we welcome the proposal that the state money, one way or another, is going to be recovered. Clause 18 as it is, with amendments, proposed amendments.
I second the move by Honorable Judy, as we have agreed that the way it is now structured here, it's really protecting even the employee. I thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ntuli and Honorable Kibi, which means I don't see hands, which means the committee agreed to this provision or insertion as proposed by the legal team of Parliament. We are moving, Mr. Mwepe.
Yes, I think this should be the last one. Yeah, the last clause is clause 20. It's just a short title of the bill. So this one, Chair, there's nothing to amend at all, even from the submissions, there's nothing. It's just a title of the bill.
The last clause, number 20, Honorable Members.
Chairperson Manduli, accepted.
Thanks, Honorable Ntuli. Thanks, Honorable Kibi. I think that, Honorable Members, those are the 20 clauses of the PSA bill as presented and agreed to by the Portfolio Committee. However, for now, we won't
Is it me? The members, I've lost the chair.
I've got a network problem, Honorable Ntuli. We will discuss further, Honorable Members, next week, and approve this report, not today, but I think at the end of this presentation until next week, Mr. Mwepe. I understand it was the last item for the day.
Yes, Chair, that was the last one, Chair.
Okay. No, thank you very much, Honorable Members. In fact, next week we will be dealing with the clause by clause of PAMA and the obvious further adopt these reports. For now, we have not adopted this presentation, but we agreed on what have been presented before us by our team. And now we're at the last item of this meeting. And I want to thank all of you Honorable members. And I also want to thank the, I saw the HOD is part of this meeting, and I know she's interested to our deliberations on this bill, which is the PSA bill. And I saw the NSG is also part of this meeting, and all colleagues, and thank you very much to all of you. And of course, I didn't expect that the DG will be part of this meeting, and also the NSG, but thank you very much to all of you. And thank you very much to the team, the legal team of Parliament, Ms. Naidu, and thank you very much to yourselves, Mr. Mwepe, Mr. Biela, our support staff, and all the support staff. We are now at the end of this meeting until Honorable Member. We thought that we won't finish this clause by clause discussions. And I know Masi was also, you know, trying to persuade me so that if we didn't conclude this morning, we further Atlantica conclude this discussion in the evening after the sitting. But we then ended agreeing between ourselves that at least we can conclude on Tuesday as we deal with PAMA clause by clause. But thank you very much, Honorable Members, with your inputs and everything. The meeting now, it's 25 to 12. At least it gives us almost 25 minutes to prepare ourselves for the sitting. The bus today is leaving at 12. So, and thank you very much to all of you. And the meeting now is adjourned at 11:35.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Hello. Hello.
Recording stopped.